Secret Societies That Threaten to Take Over America, The Work, The Rise of the Fourth Reich by Jim Marrs. And we'll be back with Jim in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Jim, let's get back into your thoughts about Hitler and the fact that maybe he didn't die or commit suicide.
All right, but first I've got to warn you and the listeners, we've had a very hot, dry summer here, and everything's about dead, and I've been praying for rain. And sure enough, tonight, right now, all of a sudden this huge line of thunderstorms is coming through. There was a lightning blast that hit just obviously very close. And I say this because I'm on a fragile rural phone system. So if I suddenly go away, you'll understand what happened. And, George, I don't know what to tell you. Just start reading from my book.
Absolutely. And we've got your backup cell number just in case, Jim. So good, make sure that thing's turned on and plugged in just in case.
All right. Now, back to Hitler. So, in other words, there was only actually, you know, even the people who were in the bunker and who have told the story by their own stories never actually identified Hitler. They only saw two bodies being carried out wrapped in blankets. The one man who would have known it precisely what happened, what really happened, and if that was really Hitler, was his deputy Führer, Martin Bormann.
Uh-huh.
But Bormann escaped. Bormann got to South America. Bormann created a huge corporate empire that I truly believe is impacting on world history to this very day. And I think that was with the connivance of the financial powers at the highest levels in England and in the United States. You see, after the breakout of the Allied armies in Normandy at St. Lo, a few months after D-Day, Bormann got together with Hermann Schmitz of IG Farben and Abt of the head of the German Central Bank, and they started what was called Action Adlerflug, or Operation Eagle Flight. It was flight capital out of Germany. They saw the writing on the wall. They knew Germany was going to lose the war, and they wanted to perpetuate national socialism. So they got gold, silver, patents, copyrights, scientists, anything that was worth anything, and they began to take it out of Germany.
And they moved it into certain regions that obviously were already selected, Jim.
Exactly. Predominantly in South America, in Egypt, and in a few other locations. And here's the clincher. They created 750 corporations all around the world. That was in addition to the some 700 corporations that they had already created through the Swiss banks. And so it was this corporate empire that continued long after the war and was able to slowly buy up, consolidate, leverage, whatever, until we see these giant multinational corporations of today, as Mussolini said. Corporatism. In fact, anyone who's been paying attention knows that just over the past 25 years or so in the United States, the large corporations just keep consolidating, buying each other up. I was concerned, coming from the field of journalism, maybe 10 years ago, that there were like where in every city in the United States, we used to have several newspapers, and they were all owned by local people.
Not anymore.
Not anymore. Then, so about 10 years ago, it was down to 15 corporations, and today it's down to 5. And the one that I'm particularly concerned about is a privately held corporation in Germany, Bertelsmann. Okay.
What is that?
That is the largest publisher in the English language, Bertelsmann AG. It's a multinational media corporation in Germany that employs more than 88,000 employees in 63 countries. And I don't even have enough time for me to tell you what they control, but here's just a few of the major publishing houses in the United States that is owned by Bertelsmann. Random House, Ballantine, Delray, Fawcett, Bantam, Delacorte Press, Dell, Delta Spectra, The Dial Press, Crown Publishers, Harmony Books, Alfred Kampf, Anchor. It just goes on and on. Plus, they own the History Book Club, the Military Book Club, the Mystery Book Club, the Primary Teachers Book Club, Doubleday Book Club, all these book clubs. And this is a company that is still privately held by the Mohn family. And Heinrich Mohn, who was chief of the Bertelsmann from 1921 on, was a member of the patrons group sponsoring the Nazi SS, and they were the largest publishers of Nazi propaganda for the German military. And these are the people who now control almost every major publisher in this country.
And so there they are. They're out there. Their influence is there under the guise of different things.
Many different things.
Talk about how these societies now are threatening America. You know, we play this little clip of Eyes Wide Shut, which Stanley Kubrick tried to finish, I believe, before he died. And
he had not quite finished it before he died.
That's
and,
right.
And I understand from my sources in Hollywood that it is not exactly the same picture that he had envisioned. They had to put it together, finish it, promote it, and put it out after his death.
And these societies that are out there today, and we know them, you know, it's the Bilderberg Group,
CFR. And its offshoot, the Trilateral Commission.
Yep, the Illuminati, which is the umbrella of a lot of these. Who are these people, Jim? You know, in terms of they've got more money than God. They've got what they want. What else do they need?
Well, they're after power and control. That's
it's a exactly game now. It's like a chess game for them, isn't it?
Exactly. And, in fact, here's kind of how it goes. I've already mentioned John J. McCloy, who was the head of City National Bank, one of the banks bankrolling Hitler, which is now Citicorp. And after the war, he became coordinator of information for the U.S. government and became High Commissioner of Germany and pardoned a whole lot of Nazis, including some of the SS men that had been found guilty of the Malmedy massacre during the Battle of the Bulge. And it was McCloy, he said, oh, they're good guys, and he let them go. And before the war, he had been coordinator of information for the U.S. government, and he created the framework that resulted in the old OSS, the Office of Strategic Services. And then, following the National Security Act of 1947, the OSS became the CIA, immune to all civil and criminal laws. And then in the 1960s, it was John J. McCloy, who was one of the, along with his protege and fellow Nazi supporter, Alan Dulles, who sat on the infamous Warren Commission to determine what had happened to President John F. Kennedy.
Oh, my gosh. It goes, you know, and as we talked about aspartame, what I have found out, Jim, as part of the research into the show we're working on, Reagan appoints a commissioner to the FDA, Arthur Hull Hayes, I believe, and he's out there somewhere. He's a consultant now to the company that did the PR for the company that had aspartame.
At a hefty salary, I'm sure.
Exactly. So it's not been passed. Three out of five on the FDA panel say, we don't like this. It's not going to be put into the public consumption. All of a sudden, Hayes comes in as the new FDA commissioner, and his first job is to add a sixth person to that vote, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So then the vote becomes 3-3, and then he gets the final vote, the deciding vote, in a tie, and so he breaks it. And all of a sudden, aspartame becomes okay to use. It becomes law. Absolutely incredible. And then he's dumped from the FDA for something that went wrong with his career. And now we've got this substance out there. And, of course, Donald Rumsfeld was part of it at the time.
CEO of Searle, he told some people at Searle, because he had been part of the team that put Ronald Reagan into office, and he told people at Searle, he said, before the year's out, we're going to get aspartame approved for a sugar substitute.
The scientists who were opposed to it would say that the acid in this ingredient would eat through the brains of mice.
That's true. Plus, here's what kills me, is that it is now documented that the that aspartame at temperatures of greater than 96 degrees, the chemical structure changes and it turns into formaldehyde. Now, I ask you, George.
It's embalming fluid.
embalming fluid. But I ask you, what is the human body temperature?
Yeah, exactly.
98.6.
Exactly.
Two degrees higher than 96, which means you put it in your system and it alters, becomes formaldehyde, and you're embalming yourself.
Now, see, this is part of what you've said
is
the secret
system. This is Nazi science. This is IG Pharma.
With no concern for the public.
None whatsoever. It's only this is corporatism. This is only concern for the corporate bottom line. And since you mentioned Rumsfeld and we mentioned Reagan, here's how we've already talked about paperclip, how they brought the scientists, mind control experts, rocket scientists over here and rolled them into our military industrial complex. And of course, the problem there is, along with their wonderful technology, you also get their ideology.
True. I mean, and there's no question we'd prefer to get their technology than, let's say, the Russians at the time, who had their share of German scientists, too, did they not?
Of course. Yeah. I can remember as a kid in the 50s, the standard joke was the Russian and the American arguing with each other, saying, our German scientists are better than your German scientists.
Well, they beat us into space, didn't they?
They certainly did. And then there's another whole thing there, too, about there seems that there's the very real possibility that there were three space programs going on, an overt American space program, Apollo, NASA, all the stuff we know
about. Now you sound like Richard Hoagland.
Well, it's all there. Do you realize when Wernher von Braun and these other rocket scientists were working under paperclip, they were they were not even guarded. They were able to go off and use the telephone in town or go post letters, and they found that they were sending messages back to Germany. And, of course, the Russian scientists were under a little German scientists in Russia were under a little tighter control, but there seems like that they were in contact. And, again, you have to understand, though, that it was at a lower level. At the higher level, the people who had created communism and obviously influenced the Soviets were also in control of our military-industrial complex. And so while the Russians were building heavy lift rockets, we were building all the guidance systems, and we were kind of in this space race. And yet, at the very top, they were able to put these components together and have a third covert space program.
Well, and I was going to say, you know, the perception was, okay, the Soviet Union beat us into space with Sputnik. They beat us into space with the first man into space.
The first woman, the first dog.
They beat us around the orbit.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we sent up Shepard, first man in space for us. We sent up John Glenn to orbit. But we beat them going to the moon, perceptively. Why did the Soviets never attempt to go to the moon with a man? Their entire program was based on going into space. Why did they stop?
Well, if you would follow the line of thinking presented in my book, The Rise of the Fourth Reich, it's because the guys at the very top, they already had their space program that worked, and they didn't want anybody else doing it. In fact, if you'll stop and think about it, George, the Japanese, the Europeans, even private companies have for years been working to try to build a space company, something that would go into space. Now, you would think that NASA would be wholeheartedly in support of something like that. After all, they're always complaining that they never have enough money for their missions, and they really so you'd think that they would be helpful to these outfits, and yet you'll find that they have tried to block and stop and stonewall all of these private and other countries' efforts to get into space. There's something very strange going on here, and I think it all goes back to the Nazis at the heart of our space program.
Henry Kissinger, I think, part of the secret societies.
Mm-hmm.
I think he botched our ability to get POWs back from Vietnam. I'll always believe we left hundreds there.
I don't think there's any question about that.
And was he not quoted as saying that he would like the world's population drastically reduced? I think he was.
Right. And if he didn't, then I have an interview in my files from Maxwell Taylor back in the early 70s, who was a ranking member of the Council on Foreign Relations, and who just flat stated, he said, the big underlying problem in the world today is overpopulation. He said, by the beginning of the next century, hey, it's like now, he said, we've got to reduce the world population by about a third. He said this will be done mostly in third world countries through starvation and disease and limited conflicts, wars. And bingo, don't we see that happening today?
Exactly. Now, what we're also seeing today, Jim, the economy the way it is, the foreclosures, just everything seems to be positioned to break the United States down, to have us crumble to our knees. And I think the secret societies are part of that. I don't think what has happened is a fluke. I don't think what has happened is just gross government stupidity. I think this was planned.
If it was just incompetence and stupidity, then the law of averages would say that occasionally they would make a mistake in our favor.
They'd hit a home run somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. They'd do something right somewhere, but it's been totally consistent. And yes, consider this, if my thesis is correct, and that the Nazi philosophy, both at the level of Nazi scientists and Morton Bormann and his worldwide corporate empire, and then Bertrist and partnered up with the international globalist and these international financiers, if they indeed were espousing national socialism, then you can clearly see that the biggest stumbling block they have to their plans for world domination is a educated, thoughtful, aware, well-informed American public. Because you see, George, we have a history of and a tradition of individual freedom and liberty. And we have a Constitution and a Bill of Rights that gives us the legal basis for this individual freedom and liberty. And we have guns. And as a result, they've had to move very cautiously. But they have moved straight forward with their plan to totally destabilize the United States. And I can't help but think that they are so arrogant in their power that they've even left behind telltale signs of who's really in charge. Look at our troops today. They wear camouflage and those flanged helmets that are German helmets from World War II. In fact, when they first introduced the new helmets, the U.S. Army guys called them the Fritz. Okay? Those are German helmets.
Well, maybe they were just a good military design.
Well, probably so, but there's always something. And then you've got, of course, you've got all these prominent people in power today, President of the United States, Governor of California, the Pope, Karl Rove, whose grandfather was a Nazi party official, and he's known, of course, as Bush's brain, and they all are just, you know, one remove from true old Nazis. I'm trying to tell people these are not neo-Nazis, okay? There's nothing neo about them. They're the real guys.
And they would like our guns taken away, wouldn't they?
Of course. And they would like to see the United States destroyed so that they can create their national socialist empire that they can run, an empire of the wealthy run through the United States. I think they even leave telltale signs behind. The most revered occult symbol of the Nazi SS was the Black Sun. And that was to symbolize the mass of dark energy at the center of the universe. And that's kind of interesting because apparently if they were thinking in those terms, then they were probably trying to figure out how to get to it and utilize this dark energy. But so today in Nashville, Tennessee, in their Bicentennial Park, we find a huge black globe that it floats on a little bed of water, and it's an amazing thing. You can put your hand on it, push it, and it'll revolve around. And it's got very lightly etched into it an outline of the continent. So you could think this is just a big globe, but it's solid black, and when the sun comes out, it blinds you. It is a black sun. It's a World War II monument in Nashville, Tennessee. It was donated by Germany.
Jim, when we come back, tell us specifically how you think these secret societies plan to take over America. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment with Jim Mars on Coast to Coast AM. Well, next hour, we'll take your phone calls with our special guest, Jim Mars, the Rise of the Fourth Reich. Hey, by the way, if you're going to be in Santa Maria, California, or if you live in that area, they still have some event tickets available and a few banquet tickets available for this coming weekend. I'll be there, and a number of other people will be there as well. If you want more information, simply go to the coasttocoastam.com website and click the schedule there that you'll see on the homepage. On the scale of their plan, Jim, where would you put them? How high up? What's the percent of completion so far?
I'd say they are probably well over 75% on the way to achieving what they want to achieve. And, of course, the big question might be, well, what do they want to achieve? And I think the late film director, Aaron Russo, may have found the bottom line answer when he asked that same question to Nicholas Rockefeller, and he said Rockefeller told him they plan to chip the population and have the world controlled by the bankers and the wealthy elite. Now, of course, they don't, you know, we all hear about the New World Order and they want one world government. Well, no, really they don't, because if there was just one world government, then they couldn't start wars and they couldn't do all the little things that they're doing today to keep conflict going, to keep up their power and their control and their profit lines. I think we get a real view of what they have in mind. If you'll go back and read the work of a British socialist named Eric Arthur Blair, who was a Fabian socialist and very well-connected to powerful people there in England. And in 1948, he wrote a book under the pen name George Orwell, 1984. And if you hadn't read that in a while, you need to go back and read it again, because you'll find that the plan was to divide the world into three main economic blocks and then play them off against each other continually for war and profit. In 1984, of course, these three blocks were called Oceania, Asiana, and East Asiana. Today in the real world, I think what we're going to have is the European Union, the North American Union, and the Asian Union. The European Union is already a fact, and a lot of the European nations are now struggling and complaining, having been caught in this whole little economic bloc, which now includes a parliament and a court, and is essentially acting as a big brother government. The plans for the North American Union are well along. And, of course, the Asian Union, that'll be real simple to put together real quick, because most of the Asian countries, like China, are pyramid societies. And all you have to do is just bring the top leadership, either buy them off or bring them in as partners, and bingo, you'll have an Asian Union. And then they'll play it all off against each other.
Can we truly stop this from happening, Jim?
Of course. We're back to the same thing that we talked about at the beginning of the program. If everybody had simply stood up and told Hitler, no, we're not going to do that, then it would not have happened. The only way all this is going to happen is if we, individual American citizens, allow it to happen. And unfortunately, we seem to be doing that. And that leads me to one of the reasons that I think my book, The Rise of the Fourth Reich, is so important. Because I think almost everyone, and I think you'll agree with me, George, every thinking person in this country, I think, would agree that this country has gotten off on a wrong path. We've taken a wrong turn somewhere.
You can feel it.
You can feel it, and you can see it. We now legally can torture people. What the heck is with that? What used to be the friendly cop on the street corner in a blue uniform and a cudgel now is a black clad German helmeted trooper that is now part of a national police force being run by Homeland Security. How do we get to all this? And when are we going to say enough's enough?
Did I read where John McCain was thinking about Tom Ridge as his VP running mate, the former head of the Homeland Security office?
It's absolutely amazing. Well, in fact, if you look at this current presidential race, you'll find out that no matter who you vote for, you're going to get the New World Order, because behind McCain is Henry Kissinger and the Council on Foreign Relations, and behind Obama is Zbigniew Brzezinski and his son and the Trilateral Commission. And one of their goals is to destroy Russia. And we can see that being played out right now. Because now we're portraying Russia as this big, bad, the resurgence of the evil empire, because they're trying to straighten out the little province and state of Georgia. And yet, look what we did when Russia tried to put missiles in Cuba.
And I want to read this, because there's this strong possibility that Tom Ridge will become John McCain's running mate. There's a possibility. and this is what he says. He says, again, he was the first secretary of the U.S. Homeland Security Department. He told manufacturers and users of radio frequency chips. This is what he told them. He said their technologies, their work, will protect Americans from terrorism.
There you go. Chip the population.
Yep.
So you got everybody under control.
Yeah. So there's
it's all part of the Nazi plan.
My God. You know, you would think you were nuts that even to bring this up. But there it is. He said this in Chicago some time ago, back in 2005.
Well, and speaking of John McCain, who some of his fellow senators call Insane McCain, does it bother anyone other than me that by his own admission, for 5.5 years, he was in the hands of communist mind control experts? Come on. And, of course, I I'm with you here, Georgie. You say, well, yeah, but he was a pilot and a military man. He could withstand all that. Mm-hmm. And that may be true. But, you know, let's look at his voting record. John McCain has voted for every aid package to Vietnam, and yet he's voted against and stonewalled, dragged his feet, and, in fact, vilified the families of missing POWs and MIAs. Is this the guy we want as president? With his finger on the nuclear trigger?
You know, and it's so disappointing that none of these politicos have stepped forward to try to find out what happened to these men and women who were over there.
And why do you suppose that is? Why do you suppose that is? And I'll tell you, because, again, we're back to Nazi philosophy. The end justifies the means. You can do anything that you can do to further your own ends. And as a result, what we see in this country today is the same thing that kept the Germans in line during World War II. Two things. Propaganda. They control the media, and we're sidetracked, and we're distracted, and we're given entertainment instead of news. And when we do get some news, it's spun, and we're only being told what they want us to hear. And then this other one, we all kind of understand this, and there's a lot of people who are, critical of the media today and corporate control. But the other one is the one that nobody talks about, secret terror. Okay? If you try to stand up and say something about it, then you're at very best anti-American, and at worst, you must be some sort of terrorist.
Yeah.
And they now have the laws on the books where the President of the United States or even the Attorney General can decide that George Norrie is giving aid and comfort to somebody, so he must be a terrorist, and they can grab you, lock you up, throw the key away, you see no lawyer, and you get to have no fair day in court.
And one day they'll legislate what we talk about on the air. You never know.
Exactly. But there's always some noble purpose. It will be under the aegis of hate crimes. You can't say that. That's a hate crime. It's just amazing what's going on. And, again, the question is, can we do something about it? Of course. We can say no. We can say no, we're not going to do this.
I think that will happen. I don't know when. I don't know how far people need to be pushed. But I think it will happen. And
it will.
Foreclosures in Missouri.
Like you said, George, you know, how far down the tube are we going to have to go? Are we going to have to wait until the TV goes blank and there's no food on the shelves of the grocery stores, and then we demand that something be done about it? Or do we take the reins in our teeth, stand up as proud, free Americans, and say, no, we're not going to do this anymore?
See, unlike what happened in Germany during World War II and in the late 30s, I think technology might help us here, Jim, because I think it gets the word out. Where in those days, how long do you think it really took for their population to realize just what the heck was really going on?
Exactly. And of course, one of the saving factors we have today, of course, is the internet, which you use quite effectively and many other people use quite effectively. But of course, the internet is a double-edged sword. The upside of the internet is that everybody and anybody has access to the internet. The downside is that anybody and everybody has access to the internet. So, unfortunately, today you have got to educate yourself and become an intelligent and informed citizen so that you can wind your way through that morass that is now the internet and begin to, and gain a little bit of perspective on what's true and what's not, what's real and what's not, what's good and what's not.
It's all about power. It's all about control. These people must be so bored, Jim, they don't know what to do with themselves.
Well, you know, we talk about various forms of isms and governments, but when you really boil it down, I think you'll find, George, that on this planet, since the very beginning, there's only been two forms of government. One is participatory democracy, which was tried for a brief time in ancient Greece and for a brief time in North America. The rest of the history of the world is central authority.
And you know what? They've planned this for a long time.
Their
fathers planned this for a long time.
That's one of the secrets of their power. They're in it for the long haul, and they're not looking next week or next month like most of us are. We're all looking to next week's paycheck or next month's paycheck and just struggling to get along. And these people are looking 20 years, 50 years, 100 years in the future and laying their plans and following their agenda.
When there are wars, do they care about these wars? Do they want to want to end them, or are they creating them?
They create them. They absolutely create them.
That's what I thought.
For example, in World War II, we now know it's beyond dispute that Franklin Roosevelt, who was a darling of Wall Street, wanted us to get into World War II. The vast majority of the American people said, no, we don't want to get involved. They were isolationists.
So they needed something.
But, of course, you know, he couldn't just say, we're going to war, then they'd throw him out of office. So what did he do? In the summer of 1941, he cut off the oil supplies to Japan that depended on 80% of their oil imports from the United States. Well, that left them with two choices. They can dry out and blow away, or they can go try to find some oil. So they begin to move into China and at that point he said, see, they're aggressors. And then they realized that they were going to have to fight us and that we were a very rich, powerful country, and the only chance they had was a sneak attack which they pulled off at Pearl Harbor. And it's now beyond question that Roosevelt, his chief of staff, George Marshall, handful of others, knew that Pearl Harbor was going to be attacked and did nothing. In fact, took steps to help it along by not sending the latest break of the Japanese code to Pearl Harbor.
I knew we would lose you. So we'll call you on your backup right now in an attempt to get you right back. And as Jim said, he's got some severe thunderstorms going through his area and lightning bolts like crazy as well. And man, did he get zapped indeed. So we'll get Tommy to call him right back on his backup cell phone and get going with that. Meanwhile, let me tell you a little bit about his work and his website, jimmarz.com. Man, he got blitzed. JimMarz.com. JimMarz.com, his book, The Rise of the Fourth Reich. I think it was lightning. You never know. You know, when we have people like Jordan Maxwell on the program and things like that happen, gosh knows what happened. Tom, you need to call him back on his backup phone, not the regular phone, because that is probably dead. So use that backup number that you see right there, if you would. And as soon as you get him back on the line, let me know. And next hour, by the way, we will have phone calls with Jim. Assuming he comes back on. If he does not, we'll go into just open lines and give you your ability to chat with him on that. And if he's not there, we'll just talk about these issues and some others as well. And, you know, we'll just to see what happens with Jim Marz, because There he is. He's back again, they tell me. Jim, you got to put him on hold for me, Tom. There you go. Okay. Hello, Jim. Are you there?
Yeah, are we back on?
Was that lightning, or are they getting you?
I don't know. I figured somebody on your end pushed the wrong button because it's calmed down here, and I don't know. Who knows? But you know what, George? This is a very good illustration. Here we are having a perfectly nice discourse, and somewhere somebody or the lightning hit or somebody hit a button, and it all goes away.
Let me tell you something. We have had controversial guests on the program, and right in the middle of something, I'm going to use Jordan Maxwell as an example, and you know Jordan.
Yes.
Right in the middle, it goes dead. Now, Jordan has told me that he was hanging on the line wondering where we are, and, you know, he's gone, so, you know, we go off into other things. We can't get him back on the line. He hears other voices in the background talking about Jordan Maxwell, saying, you know what, we've got to stop this guy and everything else. It's truly bizarre.
Well, it is bizarre, and I'm trying to keep from going out into the left field of paranoia and thinking that this is some kind of planned thing, but there's no question and no doubt in my mind that they have the capability.
No, they have the capability, indeed. So, you know, so here we are, 2008, going into 2009 in just a few more months. I can't believe how fast things are going.
Isn't that the truth? It's just like everything's almost spinning out of control.
What's the first step you think Americans should take to really begin to fight back? To say no to chips? I'm going to keep my guns? What?
Yeah, just say no. You know, they were trying to push through this Trans-Texas Corridor, which they were touting down here in Texas as simply a plan for the future to enlarge the highways. You there?
Yeah.
Okay, I was heard another strange sound. And but, you know, right now, many Texas politicians are now publicly saying that the Trans-Texas Corridor, which was to be the Texas leg of the NAFTA-inspired Canamex Superhighway that they were going to build from southern Mexico straight through the heart of America and then branched off into Canada. And it was a very ill-disguised attempt by the globalists to simply be able to bring their Chinese container ships into southern Mexico where they didn't have to worry about OSHA or the Longshoremen's Union or anything like that, and then truck all of their Chinese products into the United States and Canada. But here in Texas, they are now, people got so aroused, and they all stood up in public meetings, hundreds of them at a time, saying, no, we don't want this. And as a result, there are Texas politicians right now who have publicly stated that the Trans-Texas Corridor is dead. Now, I don't think it's dead. I think they're going to keep working. They'll find a way to come around it one way or another. But at least we've slowed it down, and people are becoming more aware of what they're trying to do.
You're right, Jim. I mean, it has slowed down. Maybe it is dead. Who knows? But people are becoming more aware of it, and I think that's making some of these politicians wake up.
I think so, too. And I think that, I don't believe that all of Congress and all of the administration and all of the government employees are all Nazis or believe in Nazi philosophy. I think that they, like most of the public, have simply been suckered. They've been told one thing. And, of course, this is Illuminati doctrine. Say anything, pretend to be anything, act like anything, you know, write and produce, say anything if it'll accomplish your end. But I think you're right. I think a lot of people are beginning to wake up, and they're beginning to realize that the old Republican versus Democrat, liberal versus conservative, it's a game that I think's about up. In fact, there was a Zogby poll I just saw within the last day or two. This is really odd, but there are more people today who are against both parties than there were 6 months ago.
Yeah, absolutely.
The numbers have come up, and now there's a movement afoot to put on the November ballot none of the above.
Yeah. None of the above may end up winning the election. We're going to take your phone calls next with Jim Mars right here on Coast to Coast AM.